Okay, so it's a good time to start Hilchos Shemitah, A, because I'm leaving to America soon. I'll be back though before Rosh Hashanah. But B, because it is time to start thinking about it. To me, one of the key points is this over here, which is don't be afraid. A lot of fear associated with Shemitah. I think one of my objectives is to get people past that fear and recognize that it's actually fairly, I don't want to say easy, right? But it's manageable. And it can really be a wonderful experience. It's certainly way less complex than Hilchos Shabbos. And as you'll see, we'll go into some of the things they share in common, but Hilchos Shabbos is a massive, complex piece of halachic work. This is a lot easier, okay? Now, I know most people, especially in the, among Orthodox Jews in Israel, the most controversial issue is going to be Heter Mechira. So I promise you we're going to get to that at the end. So if you get bored, just wait. At the end of this, I promise you we'll hit up the issue of Heter Mechira. That seems to be everyone's primary focus. Unfortunately, that's half of the story. The other half of the story, even if you hold the Heter Mechira, is going to be gardening. So if you have fruit trees, or you like growing vegetables, or even regular plants, flowers, things of that nature, lawns, etc., there's some serious questions that come up, and we'll try to go through. Again, there's no way I can cover every single scenario. That's not my objective. More to give you a sense of these are the issues to focus on, a couple specific cases here and there. And a lot of this you'll be able to extrapolate, okay? My one last point before I get started, my personal philosophy is not one of when in doubt, be machmir. That's like a disease, in my opinion. That's something that a very recent development in halacha, which is that, well, if there's any question whatsoever, always be machmir. That's not true. If you have enough information, and this is one of the actual areas where you can really derive a lot on your own, you realize it's not so complex, okay? Not so complex. So a few disclaimers, okay? In this community, in this issue, this is very important over here, okay? It's not psak. I'm not ruffling any feathers. I'm not stepping on anyone's toes, okay? Everyone understand that, right? Everyone accepts this disclaimer? Okay, any attorneys here? I want this to be a legally binding agreement, okay? And of course, I apologize if I offend anybody. I'm not sure how a Hilchos Shemitah shiur could offend somebody, but if it does, I apologize ahead of time. Just add that to the list of Yom Kippur al-Chetz. Okay, so this is one of the most, before we get to the specific stuff, what's very important to understand about Shemitah is that there's a huge gap in halachic responsa, okay? For a very simple reason. There were no Jews keeping Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael for centuries, okay? Whereas in Hilchos Shabbos, I can find tshuvas from the Rambam all the way through the middle, late Rishonim, early Achronim, late Achronim, until today, a clear line. Here, there's a huge gap, okay? There's very little responsa written on Hilchos Shemitah because it wasn't practical, okay? To give you an example, for those familiar with the Rif is one of the first collators of Gemara that's relevant to halacha. It's in the back of most Gemaras, right? But not, for instance, in the back of Kachem, because Kachem has no practical basis. Shemitah was very similar. Okay, there was no consideration of Shemitah being practical. So why is that important? It's important because much of modern halacha is a result of this individual here, the Chazon Ish. Okay, you could trace back so much of what is done today, whether it's a B'nai Brak in Yerushalayim, to the Chazon Ish. He was really the one. I'm not saying no one else was involved, but he's the primary person who, and I'm saying this not in a negative way, who created halachas concerning Shemitah. Okay, all these questions that came up living in the state of Israel, people didn't know. He, in a sense, formulated it using his mind. It was not going in a normal Western legal halachic precedent we use today, which is to seek out every early source. He didn't have that in front of him. He didn't have like a Ramah to look up or something like that. He basically had himself. And so, depending on where you stand in the camp of your support or not of the Chazon Ish, he's the one who's responsible for most of the psak today when it comes to Hilchos Shemitah, okay? Okay, and that should be fairly clear. Now, as we get, again, I want to get some of the Ikarim down, okay? We know in the Torah, okay, the term Shabbos is applied both to what we call Shabbos and obviously Shemitah, okay? And in Halacha, this word is used for both. And there's a reason why. Malacha applies both to, sorry for the Yeshivish, but Melacha applies both to Shabbat and to Shemitah, and they actually are almost the same thing. Almost exactly the same. So why is that important? Okay, as we know, if you go into Shemitah thinking about Melacha and Shabbos, then it becomes a lot easier. For example, everyone knows this case on Shabbos. Two people are dragging a bench across, it's not a joke, two people are dragging a bench across a field, okay? One person's over in Isser, the other one's not. Why? because of what their intention is. The person whose intention is to drag the bench across the field and not dig a hole, he's not over, there's no problem whatsoever. But the person whose intention is to dig a hole, he's over the yeser. Same action, same result, different intent. Well, guess what? Shemitah works the same way. Pruning, which is one of the evil four, so to speak, the four malachas you're not allowed to do, pruning, okay? Well, if you prune a tree, you could be violating Shemitah, right? Or it could be 100% mutter, okay? It all comes down to, actually, two things, by the way. It's going to come down to intent, not so much results, and appearances. This is a big issue also. But intent is the primary thing, okay? If your intention when you're pruning it, give you a classic example. If you're pruning a plant because by pruning it, it makes it look beautiful, it's like a decorative, ornamental, I don't know, whatever, plant, that actually would be mutter. That's not considered the isser of pruning, okay? So, now again, don't start, you can't ask me, well, what about this type of flower versus that? That's not for this, you know what I mean? This is just to get you start thinking when it comes to pruning, there are situations where it's mutter. I'll deal with more common cases as we go through this. So, first let's get our terms in order, okay? Am I going too fast? Okay, Shemitah, okay? We're all familiar with Shemitah, right? The mitzvah to leave the land of Eretz Yisrael untended every seventh year, beginning on the first day of Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, and terminating on the eve of the following Rosh Hashanah. The term Shvit, right, means Shemitah. It's the same thing, okay? So when you want to learn Yerushalmi Shvit or Mishnayos, you'll see it's Shvit or Shvias. Same thing as Shemitah, okay? I'm sure everyone's familiar with that. We'll see if everyone's familiar with these as well, okay? Just to make it easier for me, typing-wise, I'm going to refer to Kedusha Shvias and this with these, just easier for me. So, Kedusha Shvias, that's the status that produce receives during the seventh year. Okay, now the key thing is not that every apple on the tree becomes Kedusha Shvias when Shemitah starts. Rather, as they grow and come into season, that's when Kedusha Shvias emerges. And you'll see later on, when we take up the case of going to Rambi Levi, so often you'll go there, we'll use my formal frame of fruit, clementines. Clementines, when they're in Rami Levi, you know for sure, in Shemitah year, you know for sure those are Shemitah clementines. But apples are trickier, because apples you'll find in Rami Levi year-round. So you have to start thinking to yourself, or asking, which by the way, people are always afraid to do, you can ask, are these sixth-year apples or seventh-year? So, Kedusha Shvias only applies to seventh-year produce, okay? Peor Shvias, obviously the actual produce that contains it. We'll get to the list later on of what's included in Peor Shvias. Now, Svichim, I'm not going to take up too much, okay? Svichim was a derabbanan that was in place that basically says, in a nutshell, if you have a field, and let's say I planted a dozen carrots, okay? I knew I'd plant a dozen carrots, and let's say three more grow on their own, okay? That's Svichim. And the Rabbanan went along and extended Kedusha even in that produce as well, okay? Not as much of an issue today. I'll get to that later on, okay? So far, so good with the terms, okay? Shemitah, Kedusha Shvias, Peor Shvias, yes?
You talk about fruits of the seventh year.
Yes.
It's not necessarily the seventh year, though.
That's correct. Yes. Shemitah is actually a 2.5, well, actually, if you include wine, a 5-year process, but anyway, about a 2.5-year issue, okay? You'll see. That can even be after the year Shemitah. We'll get to that. Don't worry. The Mei Shvias, I'm not sure how many people come across this, but this is very important. The Mei Shvias means if I purchase with money, okay, cash, Peor Shvias, okay, I go to Betzalel's house, he has a little stand, mutter, a little stand in front that you only sell one meal's worth of your oranges, and I give you cash for that, that money now actually has the status of Kedusha Shvias. And you can only use that money to buy other food, okay? That becomes actually a very fascinating problem, which we'll get to, for those who choose not to rely on Heter Mechira. What to do about the Mei Shvias? Simple solution, which we'll get to. Okay?
For the merchants,
correct.
Any
okay.
Any other food.
Okay, almost done with our terms. Okay, these are the more controversial ones. Otsa Aretz, Otsa Beis Din, and Heter Mechira. This is not order of which one's better or worse, okay? So I'm trying to be as politically correct as possible, okay? Otsa Aretz is an organization under different titles, also called Vad Shmita, depending on where you are. And basically what they do is they buy produce that doesn't have Kedusha Shvias. All mutter. So they'll buy produce from Arabs, right, outside of Israel, let's say, or from America, right? They'll import stuff. They'll also, what do you call it, get involved with stuff, this is tricky, stuff that's not considered part of Halachic Eretz Yisrael. So you get the issue of, let's say, stuff grown in Eilat, okay? Eilat, as we know, is not part of the Doraisa Halachic Eretz Yisrael. We can argue if it's Durbana, but certainly not the Doraisa. So they try to get around, okay, as much as possible, fruits of Kedusha Shvias, and they also distribute produce of Otsar Beis Din. We'll spend time on Otsar Beis Din later on. Otsar Beis Din, has everyone here heard of Otsar Beis Din? Thank you. Oh, you're good. So that is, with that, again, apolitical. That is primarily used by the Haredi world, and what they do basically is, which I'll explain later on, is a special process that they engage in that ensures that what you purchase is peyor shvius, okay? And then it's hetem mechira, which this is the dumbing down version, but basically it's, we'll get to it later on, selling Eretz Yisrael, or technically speaking, the fruit trees and the soil around them to non-Jews for a two-year period of time, okay? Now what that does, right, in one fell swoop, what does it do to all produce in Eretz Yisrael? It's no longer no gedusha shvius. Okay, so I'm going to say this now and at the end. If you rely on hetem mechira, you will never experience kedusha shvius during Shemitah. Okay, for the people here who are Tzioni, which is great, it's astonishing that this became so popular in the Mizrahi world, because you will never experience kedusha shvius ever. Every fruit that you buy, yeah.
That's if you exclusively.
Oh, we'll get to that later on about mixing and matching. Okay, good.
Drink wine,
so. We'll get to that later. Don't worry. There are some people, by the way, who are hardcore hetem mechira. Just let you know, there are. But we'll get to that. Okay, but we're going to say that all the way to the end, okay? Don't be so angry. I promise I'll... All right. This is the other thing to start off with, which I think in many ways is very, in my opinion, should be very reassuring, okay? There is a spectrum of opinions that exist insofar as what Shemitah is today, okay? There is a minority that holds this Doraisa, along with this, we'll call it like a Torah Shabbat Pet type of thing. That's a minority. The vast majority hold this Darabanan, but there is a minority that holds, it's Midas Chasidus today, okay? It's quoted by the Ron, it's brought down, it's actually, the opinion is of the Baal Meor. Anyone who knows the Baal Meor and has read his stuff, he's an extremely important Rishon. The Ramban dedicated a sefer called Melchemes Hashem, which means the war of God against him. But he was an extremely brilliant Talmud Chacham, very small minority. Okay, now why is it important to know this? It's not to tell you, okay, you know what? What's the big deal in the end? Just realize that since the majority holds this, most people look at this as Durabanan, which gives us more room. Okay, but this isn't insane. Okay, this is not insane. This, for today's world, we should be thankful for. Because if Shemitah today were Doraisa, okay, then what we saw before by Hetem Mechira could never work. Okay, it would be much more challenging. So I don't think we're ready yet. This is my opinion. I don't think we're ready yet for this, okay? It's going to take a long time. It's not just one opinion is Rove Jews being here. Another one is you have to have Yovos. All sorts of opinions of what makes it Doraisa. This won't happen for a long time. Unless, of course, Mashiach comes. But this is the one we should focus on the most, okay? But you should know this does exist. There are opinions that hold that there's no halacha shmita, no halacha shmita whatsoever. Okay. Now, when it comes to the topics that we have to cover, we're going to cover little bits of each one. I didn't pick these pictures up, by the way, PowerPoint did. So I love PowerPoint. There's gardening, okay? There's produce, and then there's commercial dealings. Okay, produce meaning, let's say you have a fruit tree in your yard, okay? Commercial dealings is going to Rami Levi or whatever store you go to buy your produce. These are the three main areas, okay? So we'll start with gardening first, okay? Okay, so this is the best advice I could possibly give you, okay? If you have a garden that requires a gardener, okay? How many people here have that? Okay, please, make sure it's someone who either knows Hilchos Shemitah, okay, or someone you can trust to follow the halachas. Now, why do I say that? Well, I'll tell you why. This is so important. We'll see this later on, but it's a great example, okay? You cannot water your plants the normal way you would water them. I'm talking about an outdoor garden, not inside your house, on an outdoor garden, okay? If you have a sprinkler system set up, I'll use my example. I have a sprinkler system, I think, set up. Now, let's say it goes on every 3 days, okay? You can't do that. What you need to do to follow Hilchos Shemitah is provide water at the point, not when the plants are about to die, but rather at the point that they, I'm going to say this carefully, need to be watered. Now here's the thing. I have no clue, right? I don't know what the simanim are on this plant versus that plant and when they need it. But my gardener knows. He knows that stuff. He would tell me, I've only been here 10 years, so I've only been through one Shemitah. Great from guy, he's a Modian. He said to me, he loves gardening. You also want a gardener who loves what he does. He said, oh yeah. This one, about a week and a half. That one, like 2 weeks, okay? That's important to have somebody who knows what they're doing. Yes, uh-oh.
You have a problem, right? So you have a sprinkler system, so you have your grass, and then you have your plants that are surrounding grass. So you turn on the sprinkler, and let's say the grass needs it less often, right? But the plants need it more often. So if you turn it on, is it with that intent then?
No, it's tough. That's a great question, and it gets tricky. It gets tricky if you have one sprinkler system, because technically speaking, you really have to be careful for each plant that you're watering. Now, in general, just to let you know, when I asked them, this is my garden in Modi'in, he was like, listen, overall, it's basically, for the grass, it was one thing, but some of the trees, I made sure they didn't get water because they didn't need it. If there's spill off, right, that's okay. But if your sprinklers are both on grass and on the trees together, and that might be a problem, okay? That might be a problem. I know it's a nuisance, but that might be a serious problem. Well, a problem. I would say serious, okay? But again, this is the area that a rabbi is not going to know this stuff. A botanist or a gardener will know this stuff. They know these things, okay? You don't have to go nuts. I'm not talking about using the Latin names for the plants and saying, well, this... In general, there is a certain indicator of, for instance, with grass, there's a certain color they start turning. That's when you know it's time to water them, okay? So that's important to keep in mind. Please, get a good gardener, okay? It's a great time to support from gardeners. Best time ever, okay? All right. When it comes to gardening also, and this is why it's a good time to start this stuff, there's a number of activities that are actually usher to do prior to Rosh Hashanah. In the times of the Gemara, it was massive, okay? Something called Tosefes Shviyas. For example, starting from Pesach, you couldn't, for instance, make little ditches around an orchard of fruit trees, okay? We don't do that anymore. Remember, Shemitah Durabanan today, okay? Tosefes Shviyas, which means making Hilchos Shemitah apply even before Shemitah, that's a Durabanan. So if already Shemitah is Durabanan, a Durabanan on a Durabanan never really works, but putting that to the side, this for sure is the case. Zriya, planting, is a Duraisa. You can't plant fruit trees about 44 days prior to Rosh Hashanah for the purpose of eating its produce. So if you had your eye on an apple tree, okay, you want to make sure that apple tree is planted 44 days prior to Rosh Hashanah, okay? Very important. Now, that's produce, okay? If, for instance, you decide you want to plant a fruit tree for a non-produce reason, i.e. I love apple trees, they're going to make a great fence in front of my house, well, it's my focus about whether that's the case, okay? Again, notice intention, right? It's not a din, if you want brisker, it's not a din in the chefsa, right? It's a din in my das, how I relate to it. It's not a din, it's not a halacha in the object, right? It's what I'm doing with it. So if I'm planting it for the purpose of beautifying my house, and the apples are secondary, I'm good to go. That's also, by the way, applies to Orla too. There's a mission to Orla that says that if I plant my fruit tree for the purpose of, let's say, fence, right? The fruits themselves are not subject to the halachas of Orla, okay?
Are we talking here about when you're planting trees from seed? Or
from seeds. Trees? Even saplings. Even saplings. Soil. Saplings as well. Taking item, putting it into the soil.
So who cares if it's 44 days or not? You're not going to have fruit anyways for the next 3 days.
Irrelevant. Point is, it's the problem is planting. See, we want to get you out of the habit of planting. That's the idea. Okay? There's a debate about planting non-fruit trees, okay? Some say 44 days, some say 50 days, some say until Erev Rosh Hashanah. And then, of course, when it comes to vegetables, there's a machlokes about that, 4-3 or Erev Rosh Hashanah. My advice, right, in general is, listen, unless you have this burning need to do these things, about a week before Rosh Hashanah is around the time you want to kind of slow down with the intense gardening, okay? It's the easiest way, yeah. No, don't need to apologize. Don't apologize.
I don't
want to
be the guy who asked those questions.
You're that guy.
You mentioned Shemitah Durabanan.
Yes.
Are you going to be talking about Durabanan versus
Duraisa? Okay, so we'll get into the four main Duraisa Malachas and then talk about some of the Durabanan ones.
I guess okay. The thing I'm touching on is, I think, if I'm wrong, that a lot of it has to do with where the majority of Jews live, right? And that question is, are we at that point?
Okay, so there's a lot of indicators. There's a big machlokas about what exactly would tip Shemitah to become Duraisa. One of them is Rov Bnei Yisrael. I can promise you the Rabbanuts will not let that happen, okay? I think their interest is into making sure there's not enough converts. So this way, we keep it balanced that way. Because if it becomes Duraisa, we got problems. But there's other. I'll give you another example of Machlokas, okay?
Well,
for sure. There's a big Machlokas about, are we actually counting the correct Shemitah, right? There's a big question about whether that's the case, right? According to many Rishonim, the Rivan's one of them, we're not. We're off. Okay? And that has to do with how Yovel's counted. So that's true. That's another indicator why it would be Durbana. My feeling is, again, my opinion, we need Mashiach to know, ultimately, Duraisa Shemitah. That's my two cents. Yeah?
So I'm talking about a Suffolk, if it's even a Shemitah year, and a Suffolk if it's even a Mitzvah. So,
Remember the first, remember the Balamor? Now you understand why the idea of it being Midas Chasidus has some basis.
Yes.
Right. But that doesn't mean we should abandon the system of Hilchos Shmita.
Also needs to be
crazy. By the way, if that's like the summary of what I'm trying to talk about. Right. You have to balance it out, right? In other words, we should be precise and careful, but at the same time, we don't have to go bananas. I do believe, again, that we should experience Kedusha Shvius. I'm a big fan of that. Like, it's, to me, it's a big part of living in Eretz Yisrael. Okay?
One of the things you did not mention is in this room,
oh, it's on here.
Yeah, but it wasn't in your list of things.
That... Oh, I'm going to get to it. Yeah, yeah. That's a produce issue. Okay, so now Shemitah just started. Okay, yeah.
You have a automatic sprinkling system.
Right.
And you do not do any pu'ulot before or after.
Meaning
it goes
you...
on and it goes off.
Right.
So, what melacha did you do to violate the Chol Shmita.
Okay, so that's a broader issue of, and again, using the word malacha and applying it to Shabbos, right? Theoretically, I could automate my entire house to run a Shabbos. Bishul, right? Couldn't I? I could, right?
It's getting there.
Now, you could say that. So some would argue and say, you know what? You're right. Ein Hachinami, you haven't really done it, or you just set a timer, so you're not doing an action, okay? But others would argue and say, it's true, you didn't do the physical action, but since you could prevent the outcome from happening, you should try and prevent the outcome. But you're right. But what you're getting at, I'm saying, down that road, there's a very compelling argument. I'll give you an example. I'm going to make a confession to you, okay? It's my vidui. I put my coffee maker on a timer to go on Shabbos. I can't tell you how many people have come to my house and said, you're cooking water on Shabbos. And I said, no. My timer was set before Shabbos, right? But they were convinced that I was over an Isser, right? So theoretically, we could create an environment where you're never over Malach on Shabbos because everything's automated. You know what I mean?
Sofer did it with a long feud.
Yes. I'm saying, and by the way, we're not that far away from robots and things of that nature. It's a fascinating halakha question. The only argument that's commonly used is, what's the argument commonly used for why we don't do that? There you go. Right, okay, see, perfect. I like the Shabbos thing one more because it sounds more yeshivish. Right, which basically is another way of saying that, well, we can't really pin down what the halakhic issue is, right?
That's why they originally asked for Shabbos class, which we all use.
Right, exactly, right. Okay, but I don't want to take away from the seriousness of the thing. You're right, you could argue that since I set my timer, I don't have to worry about it, but in my opinion, there is a value in saying, you know what, I recognize the halakha is a certain way and I can prevent that from happening. So would I sit there and determine each like leaf of the, I'm not sure about that. But if I could work out a way to divert my water, that's what I would do. For me. Okay. Anyway. So don't plant Zriya, one of the big four. Don't plant outdoors. Simple as that. Okay? Yes.
If I have a concrete patio under a roof.
Well, right. So that's a great specific question. Okay? That gets into there's a whole no. I remember I told you I can't deal with every specific issue. That's a great question of what do you do with balconies, roofs, what's considered outside and inside. I'm taking a stom case, okay? My case is, I have a nice, beautiful garden in front of my house, not underneath the roof. I am not planting any trees during Shemitah, okay? But those are great questions, by the way. It really is. It's just a very complex subject. You could be lenient in something like a greenhouse, okay? That's a good example, all right? And even indoors, there are some, actually I should say many, who maintain that there are no isurim of Hilchos Shemitah or gardening inside your house. So if you're a garden, if you like have a garden fetish, just move it inside before Shemitah starts, and you can go ahead and water and do whatever you want. Okay, even these, so to speak, daraisas, you could do inside, right? So again, to me, that's a great outlet for those people. We'll get to perforated, okay? But in general, you can do gardening inside your house. That's not considered, according to most Shitas. Some Shitas say no. Yeah, Bizal.
Are planters on a balcony, second story and above, are considered indoors or outdoors?
So it's a machlokas. Machlokas, like all these things, okay? There's definitely room to be makeable about that, okay? Okay, so this is probably, of all the areas of Shemitah, unfortunately, one of the most complex, only because there's these huge debates about what perforated means. Not for this audience. I'm not saying you guys can't, I'm just saying I'm bored to death with the nuances, but for example, what's a hole, right? Is it a millimeter, 2 millimeters, 3 millimeters? Big machlokas about what a perforated plant is. But why is that important? Because if I have a perforated flower pot, let's assume it's got massive holes in it, and I put it on my ground outside, on soil, I have now effectively done what? Planted it, okay? That's the key thing to keep in mind. So, again, the easy solution is keep your...
If you're carrying it across your lawn to get it into the house.
That's different. I'm saying if you're going to plant it. I go outside and I say, I want this to be right over here. That's planting. Again, it always goes by intention. Of course, that's why I mentioned in the beginning. If my intention is, right, if I'm dragging it along the soil, but my intention is to bring it to my house, that's not a problem. It's always, my intention is to go ahead and plant it, okay? Of course, if it's non-perforated, that's not considered planting. There's no connection between what's inside and what's in the ground. Basically, common sense. But again, if you want to start getting into the particulars of when it's defined as perforated, that's a whole, like I said, it's very complex, a whole different ballgame, okay? Okay. This is the other one, another big one, promoting growth, okay? Promoting growth of plants. Very shady, what exactly, no pun intended, what exactly that means when it comes to promoting growth, okay? So, for instance, okay, this is modern-day Poskim love this one. Air conditioning units, okay? We all know that what do air conditioning units do? They drip out water. Well, this actually, and I'm putting aside your issue of whether that's a mice or not, it's an action, this is actually a big question that Post can bring up, okay? And there's two scenarios. One scenario is the air conditioning unit, does, like in my house, they have these little pipes that the guy hooked up, which is perfect to water our lawns, okay? Or you have no pipe and it's just dripping. This could be a problem. This is considered watering your grass, okay? So if you have air conditioning units, you really should put an effort, in my opinion, put an effort in to make sure they don't drip on any, what do you call it, any grass or lawn or plants. Again,
it should not be a much bigger problem, so why do you even have that in there?
So you could argue a specific ratio of nichale. You could argue that it's dripping, but I don't care about, I'm not interested in the plants growing. Here, right, we don't say that.
That's a very difficult argument to make if you have the pipes coming
right
out of
it. Oh, so what I do with mine, for pipes, I divert them.
Right, every
Arab Shabbos? Oh, no, not Arab Shabbos. I'm showing a Shemitah. I should be that would divert them.
Wouldn't it be a problem?
No, that's my question.
No, because you mean if they're directed towards the plants?
Right.
It's a good question. I still think I'm pretty sure it's still psik ratio, but I'll double check.
Doesn't make any sense.
No, well.
You daft good with kabbana, put the pipes in.
That's true, but when I turn the air conditioning on, what's my intention? I happen to know that there's a byproduct of watering, but that's how I put the air conditioner on.
Saving the water.
Yeah, it's true, but again, it's gets you arguing by the refrigerator. When you turn on, you want the engine to go on, but that's not why you open the refrigerator. You know what I mean? Okay, good question, though. Good question. This is also important, okay? I love that this is, I want to raise this with some other people. They hate this stuff. You're going on a hike, you want to do Tehillas Yadayim, want to wash your hands. Well, yeah, you got to be careful washing your hands over plants, okay?
That's another thing you do on a hike, which might be...
Good. So that actually, anything that can promote growth... No, excellent. I was waiting for that. Anything that can promote growth is a problem. So that doesn't mean you have to test the uric level, the urea inside your urine, but urine does act as a fertilizer, okay? It does. And that can be... I hope you're stopping with that, right?
That's on you.
Right. That could actually be an issue, okay? So, it's a certain mindset. Again, not neurosis, but realizing that this is actually promoting growth of plants, okay? We have even something like this, okay? Now, I'm going to say this carefully, okay? If you have a bucket of soapy water, right? So some would say, well, what's going to happen? Well, soapy water can actually... It's fine for plants. Of course, if you have a bucket filled with bleach, that will kill plants, okay? So you got to use common sense. But again, if people dump their water into their garden... That could be a problem. Okay? Moving plants from indoors to outdoors and outdoors to indoors without getting to specifics, okay? Because it's also very complex when it is mutter or not. This, according to some posts, could be a problem as well. Yeah?
Are weeds an issue?
We'll get to weeds, okay? You see, you read my mind.
Everything's covered.
All right? Okay. So what do you do? So how do I take care of my plants? So what am I supposed to do, right? What am I supposed to do? Okay, so here's the best part. All right, any Torah action that is done to prevent a plant from dying is forbidden, okay? But, and this includes plowing, pruning, planting, harvesting. These are the big four, okay? I don't think anyone here does this, correct? Right? It's true, I'm sorry. I meant like actually, you're technically wrong. Midoraisa plowing means oxes taking the instrument and moving forward. Using your hands is not considered the Doraisa version of plowing, just to let you know. It's not technical harisha. I'm just letting you know. Anyway, pruning. Okay, so that gets into shinui, okay, which we'll touch a little bit on later. Okay, pruning, planting, and harvesting. Those are the big four that Chazal actually is pretty open in the Torah. Okay, any rabbinical action that is done to prevent a plant from dying is permitted. Okay, so again, a doraisa that's used to prevent a plant from dying is forbidden. All right, so I couldn't harvest to save a plant from dying. But now, again, if you hold Shemitah today as the Rabbanan, even according to those who hold it the Rabbanan, still treat these like they're Doraisa. Just let you know, okay? Again, even though for those who hold Shemitah as the Rabbanan, we treat, so to speak, these big four as the big four Doraisa. But rabbinical actions that were usher, right, are all mutter in order to go ahead and prevent the plant from dying. So let's use watering as an example. Okay? Watering is mutter as long as it's there to prevent the plant from dying. It's usher when it's there to promote growth. Of course, you're going to say, well, what exactly is the line between preventing death and promoting growth? Guess what? What's the answer to that? We have no idea. There's no shear for this stuff. There's no, like, I know people want a manualization. They want to say, okay, well, you know what? 4.567.65 one-third gallons every week. It's just not true. Right? There's no way for us to ever know exactly what that line is. But a lot of it goes based on your intention. Okay?
What definition? If it's not dying, it's growing.
I'm not sure if that's true. Right. I'm not sure if that's the case. I admire your confidence. I think that's great. All I can tell you is that after speaking to gardeners, they tell me it's not such a pusha thing. That gray zone is a very, very large gray zone. Taking off like twigs and branches, like cutting. You know, like you do that, for instance, a lot of times in, I remember it was in Modi'in. It was a big, for them on the front community, a little bit of a hubbub. They'll chop off, like they remove certain branches from the tree, and then they put like this chemical over it. And they're pruning it because they're trying to promote its growth. Okay, that's classic pruning. That's the general idea. It also applies to, in halacha, primarily to vines. Okay, zmira, which is pruning of what it called of grapevines, was one of the main areas. That's general pruning. Okay, this is a general rule of thumb. Okay, try your best to prepare as much as you can. Obviously not with watering because that's not going to work. But as much as you can do gardening wise, try to get done before Rosh Hashanah. Okay, that's always the rule of thumb. Okay, so someone asked about weeding. Okay, excellent example, weeding. You should try to do as much weeding as possible for Rosh Hashanah. But of course, what's going to happen during Shemitah, all right? You're going to get some weeds, okay? So here it comes. If weeding is needed to prevent damage to the plants, it is permitted, all right? Now, of course, here it comes. Well, at what point do you know? The gardener knows. He's the one who's going to tell you, wow, that's a lot of weeds over there. It's time to weed, all right? I'll use myself as an example. If I saw one weed, oh my God, there's a weed. I got to get rid of it. That's not what halacha would say. Halacha would say there's a point which an expert would know about when you should start weeding to make sure the other plants aren't getting harmed. Okay? It's not the presence of one weed. It's the weeds, okay? And there's some point where that exists. I have no idea what that point is. And I'd be impressed if someone here actually knew that. Gardeners, that's their profession. They'll tell you, this is the point where you have to remove the weeds. Okay? When it comes to weeding, okay. Well, I'm using it synonymously. That's correct. It is synonymous. It is synonymous. Okay? Because the damage means it's going to cause a plant to die. Okay? In general, when it comes to these types of things as well, we'll see this also when it comes to picking fruits, they love shinuyim. Okay? So when it comes to time to weed, how do you normally weed?
The garden.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, right. So it's amazing. Like, whatever the normal way you would weed, you do something different, okay? The easiest solution, by the way, what's the easiest way to get around any of these issues of weeding? No, even easier. Come on. Well, you're on the right track. I want to, like, what do you call it? What's that? Your chemicals, okay? Chemicals, because there's no mice there, so to speak. You're not doing an action of weeding, okay? But again, you mentioned about pruning, okay? The line between what is halachic pruning and what's called trimming leaves is unclear. I mentioned before, a classic case is someone wants to, they have a beautiful bed of flowers, and they want to remove some of the leaves because to make it look better. That's technically mutter, okay? But pruning for the purpose of, let's say, making the tree grow better could definitely be a problem. Again, best to consult a gardener for these types of questions. They're going to know, hopefully, at what point it's A versus B, okay?
How about pruning, which you have a very, very large bush, and let's say before Shavuot, we have an azalea bush, we usually cut off some little branches to bring to the house. So this has no impact at all on the growth of the tree, but
why do you bring it to the house? For what purpose?
For Shavuot.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so a lot of sheep just say that's mutter. They'll say it's mutter, because you're not pruning anymore. Okay. The more classic case, by the way, is let's say, for instance, you have that big bush, and when you walk by it, it's like, you know, it scratches you. For sure, you can prune it, because that's not considered pruning, right? Even though the effect of it will promote its growth, that's not what your intent is, okay? Notice again, just like Malach on Shabbos, it all goes based on what your da'as is.
Is there a Marit Dayan also pruning?
So first of all, that gets to the issue of Marasayim by Dirabanans. Okay, remember, there's a whole Marasayim for sure applies by Diraisas. Big machlokas whether it applies to Dirabanans. So that's one particular issue. And there are cases in Yerushalmi that are don't do this because it looks like you're doing something else. But in this kind of situation, I would say you definitely room to be makol. So yeah.
Fragrance.
I don't know what that is.
So when
like fertilizer? That's bad also. That's double bad. Right, fertilizer. Right, I think I have fertilizer on here, but you're always supposed to fertilize. Fertilizer is an issue durabanan during Shemitah, okay? You should try to get all your fertilizing done prior to Rosh Hashanah. But during the year, it's a problem. It's no different than watering. Fertilizing is a problem. It's promoting growth.
It's so different, or it's a different level.
It's just like there's. Well, it's a different.
My plants can live on water alone.
Baruch Hashem. So you got.
I don't have to fertilize.
It doesn't matter. It's still considered fertilizing. That's I see what you're trying to do. No, that's not going to work.
No, I'm saying should you not put in fertilizer?
In my opinion, you should not. You should not. If you know for sure your plants don't need it, I would not. Yeah.
Now, I want to qualify this by saying I love an excuse not to have to weed for a whole year.
Okay.
But if by definition I'm only watering to sustain my plants, any weed is then detrimental.
So again, you could theoretically say that. But I'm telling you, you could say the president, but the thing is, but there's a certain point where we'll say, like, this is considered dangerous to the plants, okay? We can use that case, for instance, what do you call it? You ever ski?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So, you know, there's blues, right? Okay, those are kind of dangerous, and then there's harder blues, and then there's black diamonds, and there's double black diamonds. And you know, as you go down, double black diamonds are way more dangerous than blues, right? Same with weeds. You know that one weed, but you know that one weed isn't that much of a problem. You know that. I know what you're trying to do. You're right. So the excellent question. So first of all, the popping of the weed itself, like when it first appears, does not by definition mean the grass is in trouble. Okay? There's a certain point of the growth of the weed where it becomes a problem. So if the gardener comes over and says, you know what? You really should remove that weed. It looks like it's damaging the grass around it. Knock yourself out. But the presence of the weed itself, by definition, doesn't produce the sakana. You understand? It's not that little sapling of a weed that means it's all over for the grass. You understand?
But the big problem with weeds is if you don't remove that weed, in a week you're going to have 50 weeds.
I'm hiring you this year to be my gardener because you know these things. I don't know these things, but my gardener does. He tells me this is when you should weed. You know what I mean? I rely on his judgment. What do I know? I can do a PowerPoint presentation. That's about it. Okay, mowing lawns. Now this is a very popular one. Okay, again, I'm bringing this up because this is a relevant, practical, well known question that comes up today. Okay, if you have synthetic grass, you're way ahead of the curve. Okay, we have synthetic grass in my backyard. Baruch Hashem. Now what? Now this is one of the Chazon Ish's biggest chidushim. He made this up, and not a bad way. He made this up. Let's talk about mowing lawns. We mow our lawns. Now why do we mow our lawns in general? What?
We don't have sheep.
We don't have sheep. Okay. Why else? Okay. Well, this is true. If you let grass grow too long, it's bad for the grass. Okay. Grass is not meant to be too long. It's not even an interesting thing. As it gets too long, you want to cut it. But of course, okay, certain halachas came out. You're not supposed to just cut the very top of the grass off. When you cut it, you should always do a shinoi. So, for example, and I kid you not, you bring your gardener over, according to the Chazon Ish, and all his students after him. If you have a guy who comes over to mow your lawn, let's say your gardener comes over once every, I don't know, 2 weeks, okay? Well, the first time he comes, he should mow this half of the lawn. And then 2 weeks later, you know what he does? Mows the other half of the lawn. Shinoi, okay? Shinoi. Are you over in Issa D'Oraisa, you don't do this? No, but it is best to do it this way. Have a shinoi when he comes in, okay? Some want to go as far, by the way, say that if you have a small lawn, don't use the regular method of cutting that you normally would do, okay? Now, I'm not saying you got to take out the old hand mower, okay? I get that. Again, are you over an issur to do a shinoi? Probably not. But the ideal thing is to have a shinoi, to have some type of change in how the action is done, okay?
Now that, we kind of mow the top of the bushes, would that be considered...
That could be pruning. It depends why they're doing it. Well, it's basically pruning, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and you have to ask why they're doing it. If they're doing it, like, for instance, my wife would say, I think I can speak for her, that she wants it to look nice. She hates when it's, like, all jagged. That's mutter, okay? But if the gardener comes in and just starts doing it, and he's doing it because he thinks, it's promote the growth, that could be a problem. And by the way, your gardener is your shaliach. So you can't use the excuse of like, you know what I mean? Okay.
What do you mean by you cannot cut the top off?
Okay, so let's say you just snip the top off only. That'd be a problem. Okay? You have to take enough of it off that, in a sense, is because it's going causing the thing damage. And by the way, it's only minority positions that hold that. Yeah.
Drawing from selling our comments, is it possible to download a shtar for Heter Mechira and sell your garden to your Arab gardener?
Well, I don't know why you need a shtar of Heter Mechira. You don't want that shtar, trust me. You could just make up your own contract and say you're selling your land to an Arab. That raises other interesting issues, which
can
is
we
for
do that since we don't even own our land here, it all belongs to the army.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to. That's that nice trap. Right. Not going to walk into that trap.
We actually are a lease.
Right. I'm certainly not walking into that trap. Not a chance. Okay. However, when we'll get to the end of Lo Sechaneim. We'll get to the problem of Hetem Mechira. We'll get to that. I promise.
Okay. He's asking a different question. Here in Cheshmoyim, we actually indirectly own the land through a lease from the government and from the Minha. So legally, from Shemitah perspective, we may not even own it.
Right. So you're getting to a sticky issue because, for instance, when you say we lease it, so does that mean the government could at any point in time come into your house and kick you out?
49 years. 49
right. 49. So what I'm saying, but at any point in time, can they actually, is there any reality to them enforcing this agreement? Can they come in?
We have no idea.
Right. So in general, the halacha is that that's considered like bilis. It's considered like ownership. In other words, even though technically speaking, you're a renter, but you're not. Because in every way, shape, or form, you're exercising complete control over your property.
I'll tell you, around 19 years.
Okay, so that's 2 Shemitahs from now. Okay, fine. Then we can discuss it then, okay? So again, this is what we touched on before. Okay, when it comes to watering, okay, you want to lengthen the amount of time in between watering your grass. Again, if you have a sprinkler system that's only focusing on grass, this is a great solution, okay? Just lengthen the time. Ask your gardener, how much time do I need in between my sprinkling of the grass to ensure that it doesn't die? Simple solution, okay? Good. All right. Okay, good. That's gardening. A lot more in gardening, by the way, but that's enough for now, okay? Now let's deal with next issue. We'll switch over to produce, okay? Who here has a fruit tree, as an example, in their garden? Great, okay. Everyone's invited, okay? I think many people are familiar with this halacha, okay? It is critical, this is one of the ikarim of Shemitah, right? That ripe produce is ownerless, okay? Some people want to say you have to make a declaration. We'll put that to the side. The point is, when Shemitah starts, let's say it's December, and I have a clementine tree, and I think it's clementines or oranges. The oranges are now ripe. Okay, they are ownerless.
So how can I have a booth in front of my house and sell you produce?
Well, we'll get to that. Okay, but right now they are ownerless, which means anyone can take them. All right, like you. Okay, anyone can take it, but anyone is able to take it. Okay, so what that means is leave your gate unlocked. Okay, now I know what you're going to think to yourself. I have a gate in front of my house now. Leaving my gate unlocked, that's crazy, okay? But let's start from the beginning. There's an actual, it's a real prohibition to lock your gate to your garden. Now, I'm not talking about if you have, let's say, for example, make it simple. My garden is in front of my house, right? So I have a gate, garden, then my house. Obviously, if you have a garden in your backyard, then the only way to access it, for example, is like, let's say, through your front door, just hypothetically, that's a different issue. We'll get to when you can actually lock your front door. But the ideal is leaving it unlocked. So what would I normally do with my gate? I would leave it unlocked for the entire Shemitah. Well, actually, I should say for when those fruits become ripe. Okay? That's the halacha. Okay? Of course, there are modifications. Okay? If your garden, for instance, is on your roof, okay? You don't have to sit there and leave your front door unlocked. All you can do is put up a sign that says, listen, anybody who wants to take the fruit is more than welcome to. Some say, what do you call it? Let me know and I could bring you the key. The point is, you should make some indication to anyone that fruits are available to them. So, if you can leave your front gate unlocked, great. Okay, remember, only when they're ripe. Okay, only when the fruits are ripe. If you're uncomfortable doing that, we'll get to when for sure you don't have to, a sign stating that there are fruits there that are available is a good solution. Okay? In my opinion, this is a great Hilchos Shemitah concept. I love this stuff because it really captures what Shemitah is about. Yes? Okay, right. You could do that also. You could do that as well. You can leave it again, assuming that you took all the ripe fruit from your tree. That's the key, and that you trust that people will take a small amount. Okay, which is tricky, by the way. Chazal were way more non-trusting when it comes to that. They were very concerned about That's why we'll get to Otzar Beis Din. They were very concerned about people taking large amount. That becomes a problem, okay? And Betzalel, getting to your issue, so they're ownerless, but that doesn't mean you can't handle them. You can, they take them, we'll get to picking them in a second, you can take them and sell them. You can be koneh to them. Point is, they start off as being ownerless. That's the key. So for example, let's say on December 13th, 2021 is the day that your oranges become, what do you call it, ripe. There's a race to get to those fruits as quickly as possible, okay? Meaning whoever gets there first, it's theirs. Okay, but the point is that it's not. You start up treating them as hefker. That's correct. Okay. Well, and by the way, and that's why we're not taking up beor. Okay, beor. We'll take that up maybe when I come back. That's an issue for later on during Hilchos Shemitah. What you do with
the homeowner has the same right as the neighbor.
That's correct. 100%. Okay. Now, of course, there are times when they can lock the gate. Okay, but you still have to have that sign out. Now, what are the examples of locking the gate? So, if you're afraid of non-Jews coming in, or Arabs, right? Or animals, right? If you're afraid, let's say that, I don't know, like, what do you call it? Yeah, I don't know why I said that, but like, anyway. Animals, what do you call it? If you're afraid of animals coming in, okay? This is also important, too. If you're concerned that people might, again, assuming all the parents are shvius, people might not treat the produce properly. So if you live in an area where you're concerned that someone could come in and not treat the fruits the way they're supposed to be treated, you can lock your gate. Okay? So this is, I think these are enough reasons, okay, I was going to actually put on there, if you're from Ghana also, it's definitely a good reason to lock your gate, right? Because us Ghana people will come creeping up to your side of town. And anyway, point is that it's perfectly fine to put up a sign if you're concerned. Okay? Ideally, gate unlocked. Put up a sign though. I find the gate unlocked is better because I have a very imposing gate. So no one's coming in, you know what I mean? Even though, not that I don't want people to come in, but no one come in. Put a sign up saying, listen, there are fruits here, they're going to come in. Yeah.
Looking for a yes or no answer. Someone
that's not fair, by the way.
Someone takes fruit from Shemitah produce, mm-hmm. Do they have to take fruit from Masa?
No, but we'll get to that. Okay, we're going to get to a little bit of that, okay? All right.
Can I take it to my house?
What? Yeah. Don't worry about it, yeah. Picking fruits, it's a whole different, it works completely differently by Shemitah, okay? People get very nervous about picking fruits during Shemitah. They think that there's an issur to do that. It's not true, okay? If the produce is Kedusha Shvius, okay, you can pick it as long as it's with the Shinoi, okay? Now, what does that mean? Well, I don't know how you normally pick your fruits. The way I pick my fruits is I go like this. So ironically, what would I do instead of doing this? I would use a kli, like a pair of scissors, because I would never, which would seem to be more efficient in general, but I would never do that. But if you're a person who always uses, let's say, a pair of scissors to pick your fruit, so use your hands. Point is, just make a shinui. But you're allowed to pick the fruits, okay? The thing what people don't get about Kedusha Shvius is it doesn't mean they're like, don't treat it as like taboo or like usser. No, you can pick the fruit. I'll tell you what you have to do with it afterwards, but it's perfectly fine to do it, okay? Now,
you do a shinui for olives? Because olives, you have to knock it down, unless maybe you do it with the left hand.
It could be, yeah. Why not? That's my... again, my botany knowledge. Yeah, I like clementines. Clementines. That's what I'm good at, okay? Also, by the way, keep in mind, remember, Shemitah is a two and a half year, so to speak, problem, meaning that there could be fruits even after the seventh year that the issue of picking with the shinui applies. Well, Kedusha Shvius is not limited to just...
Are very
there you go.
Olives, the time of the year that typically ripe is around Sukkot. But they start growing essentially before Shana, and then they ripen during the period between Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot. And the question is which year?
Excellent. Both years. That's a great example of how this could be difficult, okay? Pre-Shemitah produce obviously can be picked normally. So even though it's the seventh year, if you still have some lingering pre-Shemitah produce, you can pick it normally, okay? But again, my garden's very simple. We have an orange tree in the front and I think grapefruit tree in the back. Push it, okay? I know exactly when they're going to be ripe. I know how I can pick them, etc. All good to go. Okay, is that clear? So don't be afraid of picking fruit in your garden, right? Even though it's ownerless. If Basal, you have any fruit trees, right? So, but if you see people running in your house, like trying to get to the fruit, they have the right to do that. Don't dead out the shotgun and chase them off.
If I run into my house for the fruit, I can shoot them second.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
What if you have pre-Shemitah fruits are not ownerless?
Right, so I would direct people accordingly. Your sign's gonna be a lot longer. It would be like, okay, that tree, right, the tree in my left, that's 60 fruits. You gotta be clear about that. Yeah, 100%. Okay, you can't pick unripe produce, okay? When picking produce, this is also a huge area in Shemitah. make sure you limit the amount. In general, back then, they would judge the amount based on a meal's worth. Okay? Very interesting concept, because today, if I asked you, I would like a meal's worth of clementines, how many clementines would that be? It's a great question, right? We don't. It's a big question what exactly a meal's worth means. But in general, the point is like this. The point is, you come in with like this basket this big, that's not a small amount. Small amount is a handful, okay? That to me is a small amount. And the postcards are very wishy-washy insofar as what exactly that shear is. So be sensible, okay? You know what I mean. There's industrial fruit picking, and then there's normal fruit picking. Normal fruit picking is a handful of clementines, okay? Okay. Also, what's interesting is that while it's true as the owner, I'm supposed to leave my gate unlocked, Chazal weren't actually so in favor of people going to other people's gardens. And the reason why is that, well, if I know I can go into your garden during Shemitah, what's going to happen in the the year after Shemitah? I'm back, right? You get used to the idea of going to someone else's property. So they don't like that so much. So, of course, it's not usher to go in and take the fruit, right? But at the same time, it's like, I'm trying to think of the right word. I don't know what the right word is. But anyway, don't be the kind of person that says, I can't wait to go to every single person's gardening during Shemitah. That's not the objective here. Because then you're going to start thinking that it's appropriate to go ahead and do that, and then you're going to be over breaking and entering at some point in your life. So try and avoid that if possible, okay? Like in Gane. Okay, anyway. All right, Perishvias. Now, what are Perishvias? Now that I have my fruits or produce in my house, what exactly is included in Perishvias? Sorry about it, it's so small, but basically we have vegetables, okay? Fruits, grains, okay? Now, grains do not pose an issue until the year after Shemitah because of the way they grow. So don't ask me about how we treat grains now, okay? Etrogim, also a fun issue. I didn't take this up now. It's a great thing for after the summer, but you'll see when you buy your Arba Minim, it's different. The way they sell Arba Minim is different, assuming you use an etrog grown in Eretz Yisrael, all right? Bananas, okay? Legumes, rice. Now, this is important. I love mushrooms, okay? Mushrooms are not included in the list of produce. No mushroom. I happen to love mushrooms. Not those kind of mushrooms, like mushroom. I love mushrooms, so I'm happy that's the case. Flowers, big machlokas about whether flowers get Kedusha Shvias or not. Again, most postmen would say, try to avoid dealing with them. I'm not trying to put the flower guys out of business. There's definitely shittas who hold that they don't have the status of Kedusha Shvias, but if they do, when we get to how you treat things Kedusha Shvias, be aware, you have to take care of them, okay? You have to take care of those flowers. We'll get to what you do with these, but this is the important list of what you should look out for when it comes to Kedusha Shvias, okay? I'll get to what happens in the supermarket soon.
Flowers are talking about flowers from Ashtaroth using a plant? No, you're talking about flowers
from Ashtaroth.
Okay. Yeah, exactly, those, okay?
But what happens if you let them, if you...
We'll get to that. And let them die. We're going to get to that. That's how you treat Kedusha Shvias. Okay, so it's critical to realize that not all produce, okay, acquires a status of Kedusha Shvias as Rosh Hashanah. Okay, remember, it doesn't mean that when Rosh Hashanah hits, every fruit that's on a tree right now automatically Kedusha Shvias. No. Fruits are, in Israel, okay, fruits are seasonal. Okay, that's actually a great thing that happens here. Like, I'll give you an example. So I know most people make the Shechianu, for those people who like to make the Shechianu on the second night of Rosh Hashanah, what's the way around the issue? You have that new fruit, okay? However, by the technical nature of halacha, it's not the consuming of a new fruit that demands a shechianu, it's the, anyone know? The seeing of it. And where would you see the new fruits? In the shuk, okay? It's when you go to the market and you see, look, the clementines are in town. Okay, it's not the achila. It's a little bit of a misnomer. But in Israel, you can actually do that. In America, it is almost impossible, not impossible, almost impossible to make a Shechianu because there are no new fruits. It doesn't mean a fruit that I haven't had. It means there are no new fruits. When you go to Walmart, right, there's always oranges in Walmart, no matter what, okay? There are a few here or there that are seasonal, but in general, it's not the case. Here in Israel, okay, we wait till the fruits come in. Now, that makes things a little more, complicated. Baruch Hashem, with the internet, you can find online charts, tons of charts that will tell you, expect clementines to be in Rami Levi in December, and that's when they have Kedusha Shvias. Okay? I highly recommend print out the chart, put in your refrigerator. You will know. They're not complex charts. It's literally like, you know, bananas this time, you know, oranges this time, etc. You'll know ahead of time. Okay? So it's not automatically that all fruits are Kedusha Shvias. It's something that happens. It happens throughout the year. Okay? So you need to know when these, especially if you're going to hold a pair of Shvias, you need to know when these things enter into the marketplace. Okay? And it's possible that those fruits or vegetables you see are not seventh-year fruits or vegetables, especially vegetables, okay? So when you see carrots, don't assume automatically if it's November that those carrots are Shemitah carrots. The best way, one way solution is ask, okay? There's nothing wrong with asking. I mean, you got to ask the right people, but ask. What?
My carrots don't talk. I ask them all the time.
That's, you seem like the kind of guy who would ask your carrots. Anyway, okay. Oh, you can always ask, okay? All right. Now, when it comes to the fruit business or the commercial aspect of Shemitah, okay, so we're going to be working for now under the assumption that we are treating fruits with Kedushas Shviyas. Again, we'll get to Hetem Mechira soon. But for now, let's pretend Hetem Mechira doesn't exist. And now I'm dealing with produce that is no question Kedushas Shviyas, okay? So, again, no Hetem Mechira. We're going to get to that. I promise we'll get to that, okay? Okay. When you buy fruits, okay, for the first half of the year, all fruits sold in the marketplace do not have the status of Kedushas Shviyas. It's really until later, the second half of the year, that you'll first face fruits that have Kedushas Shviyas. Okay?
That's even something that you physically see grow if it happens to be in the first half?
Usually that's the case, yes.
So
definitely commercially. Definitely commercially. I don't mean in your yard, commercially. Okay, we're dealing now with the commercialization, okay? Right, so what happens is that's why you can go ahead and knock yourself out buying fruits probably until the wintertime, and that's when you have to start fastening your seatbelt and recognizing that Kedushas Shviyas is becoming a concern. Again, the charts are the best guide for this kind of stuff, okay?
Fruits,
yes. Vegetables are trickier because vegetables are much iffier, but again, those charts have vegetables as well, okay? Okay, and they have them in English and Hebrew too, by the way, for anyone concerned. Okay, so, all right. The ideal, in my opinion, the ideal that you should try to aim for is to buy produce from someone who's Shemitah observant, okay? Now, of course, that's very difficult because when you walk into Supersol, is Supersol Shemitah observant? Are the employees of Supersol Shemitah observant? Most probably not. So, of course, when I say ideal, practically speaking, it's going to be very difficult unless you, I'm not even sure where, but it's very difficult, Maybrock, Kiryat Sefer, I'm not sure. I don't know what happens here on the Yishuv. But it's hard to find people who are observant of Shemitah, right? It's hard. So we're stuck, so to speak, with using stores. But the problem is, this is another big one in Shemitah, doing Sechora or commoditizing fruits or produce that has Kedushas Shviyas is an Isser. Now, I'm using the word commoditizing for a reason. It doesn't mean I cannot purchase Peor Shviyas. I can purchase small amounts, but I cannot commoditize it, okay? Again, what's the shear between small purchase and commoditizing? Great question. Tosos tries to give an answer.
So
there's no exact shear.
Freeze half of what I buy. Is that commoditizing?
Yes. If you go, right, exactly. If you go to the store.
If you go and buy fruit, some of them I have, some I want to freeze for shakes later.
That's 100%. You should not do that. That's an example of commoditizing. You buy what you need. You don't buy for the next 2 weeks. No, Pasal, you're right. Don't buy for the next 2 weeks. You shouldn't do that. You buy for what you need, okay? And this is also tricky. When you buy because that's considered commercialization. Like, you need to buy what's necessary. This is also technically a problem.
How are the stores able to buy?
Okay, we'll get to that. We'll get to the Hetem Mechira issue. We'll get to how they do it.
Well,
except for Otsar Beis Din. We'll get to that, okay?
Commoditizing, we're talking about the actual fruit or also the byproduct, like wine. Because wine, when I go to the store and I buy 3, 4, 5 bottles, and they're asking for money.
That's a problem also. We're going to get to that too, when we had to deal with Peor Shviyas, okay? But yeah, we'll get to that as well.
So,
yes. Yeah, it has to. Whatever you buy, really. I'll give you an example. You have a bar mitzvah coming up, okay? So, can you buy? When you're buying for everybody else, you could argue that you're buying for each individual. But to buy to store up, not only should you not do that, there's something called biur. Now, biur is after the fruit is no longer in the fields anymore. Any leftover that you bought, I won't call it a punishment, but you got to take it outside and actually mafkir it in front of people. Okay? So you see, halacha is very sensitive to this. Take what you need. Otsar Beis Din was set up for this very reason. You get what you need and that's it. Okay? Now, does that mean you have to count out, well, listen, I have a clementine on Monday at 4? No. That's crazy, right? But you know what I mean. You know, anyone here a Costco purchaser? Don't Costco your Shemitah produce. That's not the right attitude to take. Okay? And I love buying, like... Okay, so how often do you go shopping?
I go once a week. I take to
and that's your normal purchase? That's fine.
But
that's fine. But I'll give you an example. You go to Rami Levi and you see they have a tremendous sale on cucumbers, right? It's like 10 agarot for a kilo. What are you going to do? You know what you're going to do. That's the problem. Okay? That's the issue.
But it happens to be that with fruits and vegetables, they don't last. So you really don't last.
Unless you freeze them. Oh, that's true. In general, that's the case. You're right. You're right. 100%. Again, there's no clear line. That's true, but still, you still shouldn't do that. And then you run into another problem of you don't want to deal with a lot of Kedusha Shvias in your house. It gets, like, you know, you'll see why in a second, okay? Well, that's what we're going to get to. We're going to get to that, okay? All right, so now I have my Peor Shvias. They're in my house. I purchased them, halakhically, correctly, okay? Enjoy them, okay? There's only two rules you have to know when it comes to your Peor Shvias. Number one, don't ruin them, okay? What's an example of ruining them? Throwing into your toilet, okay? Taking them outside when it's 115 degrees outside purposely, just because you want to put it out there. That's ruining it, okay? And not wasting. This is obviously the big one, okay? Now, again, you'll see it gets tricky what wasting actually means. It all comes down to what leftovers are. So, if I have leftovers, don't ask what those are yet. If I have leftovers of my apples, I can't chuck them into the garbage, okay? So what do I do with them? Well, it's very simple, okay? You get something called, if you're yeshivish, a pach shvias, which is a fancy way of saying a little tiny garbage can. But if you call it pach shvias, it makes it holy, okay? Just a little garbage can. It's all you need, a compost container. For those echo people, a compost container. In my yeshiva, we've got one in every apartment and two in the base medrash. In my home, we'll have like one or two of them. And it's very simple, okay? What you do is you have this pach shvias that you set aside for Kedusha Shvias. You take the leftovers. You don't even have to do this paper towel stuff, but most people say you do. You take the leftovers, you wrap it in a paper towel, and you put it in that little garbage can. And you know what you do? You wait 3 days. I have this fight with my wife all the time. How long does it take for it to rot? She claims an hour, right? I'm like, no. Like, so you wait. You wait until it rots. Now, how long does that take? 2, 3 days, 4 days. I mean, you know, it's not like, what do you call it? You don't have to sit there and keep it there for a month, okay? I should say place, okay? Place the item in the small container. You wait for them to rot. You don't have to stand over it and count, is it rotted yet? Once it rots, you know what you do with it then? You throw it in the garbage. That's all it takes. 1 second. That's all it takes for Kedusha Shvias, for Peor Shvias. That's it. That's it. All it means is that when you have leftover, don't throw it in the garbage. Throw it in this Pach Shvias, i.e. small garbage container. Leave it there for about a few days until you know it's rotten, and then you go ahead and throw it away. The same applies to, by the way, with wine. Wine's tricky. If someone buys you a bottle of Shvita wine, they're not so nice because you really need to finish it. Now, let's say you can't finish it. Well, you take the remains. You got to leave it out until it's at the point where you wouldn't drink it anymore. Until it, so to speak, becomes, not even vinegar, by the way. Really, could be a long time, right? Exactly. But the point is, this is the solution. It's very easy. To me, it's great for people with little kids. What a great educational thing. You have this little container. Put your fruit, leftover fruits in there, okay? We'll get to what leftovers mean, but this is the essence. This is what it comes down to. Very simple. Very simple, okay?
The problem is once the first stuff you put in there is rotten, you can't put anything else in there.
Get two pachs.
Or you have some neighborhoods not far from here where they have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos cans. And on each day you put in...
Right. So that's an impressive... Like, I wish... I mean, we don't eat... I eat a nice amount of vegetables. I don't eat fruits anymore. So I don't have that much, but I hear that. You're right. That could be an issue. Again, it's also, you know, where you keep that pach. I don't suggest overfilling it so that there's flies everywhere. You have to have common sense. I think you see that's the theme.
You put it in a plastic bag and it's separated from your garbage. You can put it in your garbage.
Okay, so you could do that, but most people say best not to do that, right? You could do that. You could say, listen, I'm putting it in plastic. But the truth is, again, it's Kedusha Shvias. I understand why Pach Shvias became a very popular idea among the poskim. Because it's saying, you know what? Before I toss in the garbage, I relate to a certain way. Let me ask you a question. What do you do with your lulav after Sukkot?
I burn it with my mom with my Pesach.
Right. That means that, see, so
if
you're, so a second.
I want to print out lulav holders that right. Both so,
right. So, which means that you treat the lulav with a certain amount of, you know, you're not mivazeh, even though there's no mitzvah lulav anymore, you treat it a certain way. It's the same thing over here. Like, you treat it. The Pach Shvias treats it with a certain level of kavod, okay? But you're right, technically speaking, if I wrapped it in plastic, I could do that, right? I just think it's a little bit, it could be, some would say it's a mizayim, okay?
Is there a specific location of the Pach Shvias needs to be, like, so inside?
As close to your bed as possible. You want it right next to your bed, right? It makes the... No, it doesn't matter where it's located. It doesn't matter.
But outside, maybe the purpose gets hot. The purpose you want faster.
So right, but you don't want animals to start messing around with it. That gets to the whole other issue. So I keep mine. I don't remember. I haven't been to Chashman yet long enough, but I think I'm going to keep mine somewhere in my kitchen. Somewhere. Okay? We'll find a nice pach location. Okay? All right. What are leftovers? Excellent question. What are leftovers? Okay? Yes, this is the language. A substantial or significant amount of leftover. What does that mean? Okay, so I'll give...
Watermelon where you...
No, for sure not. But I'll give you a great example, okay? The example is that at what I went out with my daughter this morning for breakfast, okay? And I made her a great deal. She's like, she wanted to know what to order. I said, I'll give you the best idea because I had breakfast already. I said, order the breakfast for two because you'll have 90% of it, okay? Now, after she didn't even come close to finishing it, okay? That's significant leftovers. What's the barometer? When you asked for a doggy bag. You know for sure that's significant, okay? This is important. If you have like half a French fry left, that's not considered leftovers. Those are scraps. Yeah.
So if you're serving a meal and your people left over their screenings or whatever, you don't have this great bowl of screen you need into the pot.
No. As long as it's considered, and again, no one says what the line is. There's no idea of three versus four. It's more about, well, like again, I had guests over Friday night, right? When I had the plates in front of me, I was scraping off the leftover food. There was definitely three or four whatever's on the plate. That's scraps, okay? But if again, to me, the shear is, if I'm in a restaurant and I ask them for a doggy bag, that's leftovers, okay?
And apple cores and peels are not.
We'll get to that in a second, okay? We're almost up to that section, okay? So, substantial versus small amounts, okay? There's no exact shear. So I really think in general, when you have someone over for Shabbos meal, okay, and let's assume you're holding their of Kedusha Shvias, so you just got to be careful. You got to say, you know what? If there's a huge amount in their plate, I would put in the pach. If there's what you would consider to be scraps and leftovers, you put in the garbage. Okay? It's as simple as that. Okay? All right. Other case to consider, for example, and again, there's many more, but it's getting to the right mindset. If you have soup that has a flavored pear shvias in it, okay, let's say I made a chicken soup and there were shvias carrots in it, and therefore, let's say the flavor got in, but the carrots were out, that the soup itself is a problem. And it has to be left out for a day until it, so to speak, goes bad. We know you can't waste any leftover grape juice. Remember, Peor Shvias can take on different forms, like grape juice, okay? All those menhagim that people love, spilling grape juice for Havdalah and Pesach, all those things, best not to do those. I don't do them anyway, but best not to do them because you avoid a lot of these problems, okay? Now, this is also very important. You should not cook Peor Shvias that are normally in raw, and you should not eat raw Peor Shvias that are normally cooked. Now, it turns out there are very few categories in two extremes. Most of them are right in the middle, and when they're right in the middle and go either way, it's fine, okay? But in general, this is an important rule of thumb. This is a question of how to treat the Kedusha Shvias, okay? They're holy fruit, so to speak. There's a certain way to treat them, and the way they're eaten is the way they should be maintained.
No orange marmalade.
You know, you could do that. You could bake jelly. Yes, you can actually do that. You cook it?
I remember the Chagonishnik of Shavar. We made orange marmalade with...
Well, I don't know. I thought you just like... Actually, you know what? I don't know how you make jelly.
It worked, and that's why I'm wondering
okay. If you finish them. I didn't know that. I thought you jelly it. Then you shouldn't do that.
What's an example of things like that that you shouldn't
eat? I don't know. Tell me something that you normally would eat raw.
Apple pie.
No, apple pie is not a food. Apple pie is not produce.
Eat cooked,
in other words, I take the fruit itself. Oh, right. So apples can... So apples can be eaten raw and can be eaten cooked. But let's say potatoes. That's always the easy one. Who here eats raw potatoes? Exactly, right. So they're never meant to be eaten raw. So that would be a problem. If you ate a potato raw, right, that's a bizayon, so to speak, to its Kedusha Shvias. You should avoid doing that. What? That's also true. This is also important, by the way. No achilas gasa. Achilas gasa means if I had a big meal, right, and they bring, like, I'm stuffed, okay, and you bring out an apple pie dessert with holy apples, right, Kedusha Shvias apples, that could be a problem, okay? This all represents an attitude that we're supposed to have towards Peor Shvias, okay? Treat them, in a sense, with a certain respect, okay? I know there's a lot I wrote here, okay? So I'm just going to jump to this only because of time, but basically you should keep in mind that you're, of course, allowed to peel fruits and vegetables, but keep in mind some peels can have the status of Kedusha Shvias. Give me an example of a peel that would be considered Kedusha Shvias.
Apple peel.
Okay, apple peels, what else? Orange peels, right? Who said cucumber peels? Unsure.
Really?
But they sell orange peels in the shuk covered with chocolate. So you got to be careful.
Only with the chocolate.
Oh, so there's a big bachlokus about whether you treat those as Kedusha Shvias or not. The point is that in general, the rule of thumb is that when it comes to peels, what I always recommend people to do is, I'll send you all the slides. Don't worry. I can share them, okay? The ideal thing is to dispose of peels inside your pach shvias. That's the easy way around the problem. But again, we can go into, and this is the tricky part, right? If you have a peel, right? Let's say I take off a peel that normally is not edible, but it has some of the produce attached to it, pach shvias, okay? If the peel is used for consumption or other usages, pach shvias, okay? So a general rule of thumb, you're usually going to chuck your peels in the pakshvias.
So going back to the leftover question. So my wife makes lemon chicken. So there's some leftover lemons usually, you know, after the Shabbos.
That's correct.
So the question is that's not a...
Right, so you mean in the, like... like my wife does it also. She puts, like, a lemon inside the chicken, right?
As the seasoning. It's not the Ikara of the food. You don't right. actually use...
Or slices of lemon.
Right. So again,
is that leftovers or is that peels? Because if it's not... Ironically, if it's not enough leftovers, it can be disposed of.
Right, it's a good question. It's an excellent question. You're straddling the line.
Your chicken is
right, that's actually a good point.
It depends how much of Tom can infuse in it, but that's true. That's right. It's a good question. But pits are also an issue, okay? Yeah, we'll get that. We're almost ahead of Mechira. But pits are also an issue. Remember, pits, if you have produce on the pit, okay? Like my wife, when she eats plums, okay, she'll sit there and keep that pit in her mouth like an hour. There's not 1 ounce of flesh on that pit. But you got to be careful, okay? If there's fruit stuff left on the pit, that could be a problem, okay? Perishvies and Chulin, if anyone wants copies of the slides, then I'll send it to you. It's also a complex issue. If you know how Machal Sesuras works in general, same enough as right apply here, which is Batal B'Shishim, okay? We all know Batal B'Shishim at Basar and Chalav. It applies by Perish Shvias as well. But the key point is like this. You can mix your Perish Shvias with, you said apple pie before, make your apple pie. Don't be afraid to make an apple pie. Just realize there's Kedusha Shvias to deal with. But there is a point where if there's a dash of Perish Shvias and a massive dish of non-Shmita stuff, that's considered, that won't have the status of Perish Shvias. Yes?
What about the spices?
Oh, so that's an excellent question. So spices, they're not considered ocha, okay? Tavlin are never considered ocha in general, okay? Now, that gets tricky when it comes to like a big clove of garlic, but certainly what's in your spice containers is not a problem, okay? All right, money. Real quick with money, I mentioned before, when you purchase produce that has a status of Kedusha Shvias, if I go to Rami Levi, okay, and I buy produce there, okay, let's assume I don't hold Hetter Mechira, or I'm buying Otsar Beis. Well, I don't hold Hetter Mechira, so I hold that those Perus Hashvias, when I pay for that, when I give that money to the cashier, that cashier now has in his or her hand money that's imbued with Kedusha Shvias. And that person is now Chayev to treat it that way. So what's this, one second, what's the solution to this problem, okay? It's the easiest solution in the world, which is don't ever pay in cash, okay? It's not a workaround. As long as you use a credit card, there's no issue with Dmei Shvias. Now, I don't just mean like a credit card like American. I mean Israel, okay? Like what we like everyone uses, right? Right. Well, it's sort of like a debit card, right? There's no reason you don't ever pay in cash. You avoid every problem. Use a credit card.
Yeah. The bigger problem is if you go to a greengrocer and buy fruits and vegetables, he's giving you change, which has got Kedusha Shvias.
That's also true. That's also true. Again, credit card. Right. Always use a credit card. Okay? It's the easiest thing. Oh, because you're not actually, there's no actual cash transaction. It's the actual transaction of A to B that produces the problem. There's nothing for it to be tofus on. Okay. Now we'll end off with this. Okay? Hetter Mechira. Okay? For anyone who wants to see it depends on which version. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has in a big sefer his history of Hetter Mechira, and Rav Tuk Kaczynski in the smaller sefer Shemitah has his, so to speak, history of Hetter Mechira and everything in between. I do not want to get into, I have no skin in the game, okay? I don't want to get into any politics. I just want to bring down the major positions. It's Otsar, because it's important to know what they are. You should decide on your own what you think is best. It's Otsar Beis Din, and there's Hetter Mechira. Those are the two methods. Now, Otsar Beis Din can trace its roots back to the Tosefta. The Ramban actually clarifies it, but that means in the times of Chazal, right, we're talking about, you know, Gemara, Mishnah, Gemara, Otsar Beis Din was invented. Now, what does Otsar Beis Din mean? Well, basically, it'll be like this. In Chashmonaim, okay, let's say right now we have an incredible Beis Din here, okay? We all bring our produce to the Beis Din, okay? Here, Beis Din, here's all my produce. Beis Din then takes the produce, they're not kona it, okay? Remember, they're not purchasing anything. They take the produce and they put it in a storehouse. And then what happens is, what would you do, okay? You'd come and take 3 meals worth during the week. Okay? Or daily, whatever it might be. Whatever your needs are, you come. Imagine a world like that. Okay? Notice, no transactions, no commercial, nothing. Everyone voluntarily brings produce, remember, it's ownerless, produce to Beis Din. Beis Din then, in a sense, inventories, puts in the storehouse, and then people would come as needed, and Beis Din would distribute the fruit. That's Otsar Beis Din. That's not what happens today, by the way.
Well, that, people, but you're talking about farmers and then the consumers.
That's correct. Right. In fact, right. In fact,
farmers
there are no.
Bring it. And
right.
The consumers that take
right.
It.
But again, but it's but there's no payment. That's the key. Okay.
Why is it ownerless? You said that when it's on the tree, it's ownerless. But when someone comes and picks it, he owns it.
Right, so Beis Din
Beis
Din didn't want, you'll see why in a second, Beis Din didn't want that to happen. Okay, they want to avoid a problem. You'll see what that is in a second. Okay? Okay? So the other thing is, Beis Din would hire workers, again, it's times in the Gemara, to harvest produce. Okay? And then they'd hire the workers, this is the key. They're hiring the workers simply to harvest, okay? But not to do what? What?
Not to take ownership.
Okay, not to take ownership, okay? They would then take those fruits and store them in storage units. And then every Friday, they would distribute those fruits. So again, the people at their own little farms, they bring produce. For the larger venues, they would hire workers and all always funnel back to Beis Din, and Beis Din would distribute accordingly. Okay, that's Otsar Beis Din. Why was this important? Well, no, one of the objectives was to make sure people did not engage in commercial activity. That's why they set it up this way. What they didn't want to happen was they didn't want Pitsala to scoop up all his fruits, set up a market down the corner, and start actually engaging in commerce. So they cut out commercial activity and did this, okay? So another has to do with beer, which I'm not going to get to now, but they wanted to prevent isurim that take place by beer, which means hoarding these Kedusha Shvi'as fruits and then having to deal with them at the end. So Otsar Beis Din became, is without question, way before Het HaMechira, the halachically, I guess, ideal way to manage the issue of Peirush Shvi'as. That's not Otsar Beis Din today. Okay, today it's a little bit different. What's Otsar Beis Din today? Well, first, landowners, generally from, okay, they give, okay, major quotes there, major quotes, give their land to Beis Din, okay? They give it to Beis Din, okay? Now, what Beis Din says is, Beis Din says, this land is now Sibur land, okay? Technically speaking, all of us, right, could walk onto that land. Become Sibur lands, okay? Now, what they then do is they appoint people to engage in the malachas of harvesting. Again, because they've taken away the ownership of the land, it's kind of in a neutral state, they're allowed to do this on the condition where when I'm the consumer, okay, when you go to Rami Levi and you go to the Otsar Beis Din section and you pick up the carrots to buy, you are not purchasing carrots. What you're paying for is the fee that they are, you're paying a fee for the amount that they pay the workers to harvest the stuff. That's Otsar Beis Din. What's astonishing, though, is that somehow Otsar Beis Din stuff is always more expensive than Het HaMechira stuff. It's a wild thing, right? It costs more money for some reason to hire people to do the work than it would to hire people to do the work and sell it. Very odd, but it is true. It's more expensive. But that's Otsar Beis Din. It's a clever, so to speak, workaround to the problem. What you gain by Otsar Beis Din is you still are dealing with Peirush Shvi'as. Okay, when you go to Rami Levi and you see Otsar Beis Din, that's Peirush Shvi'as. So you maintain that. But understand what you're paying for. You're not buying those fruits. When you give your credit card in, you're paying for whatever fee the fee that you're paying is to pay Beis Din for the fact they paid these workers. Okay? That's Otsar Beis Din. Is that clear? Okay.
How does the Otsar Beis Din get financed to actually get the workers to pick the fruit? Because they don't get the money from selling the fruit.
Excellent. No, I know what you're asking. I have no idea who lays out the money first. I have no clue.
There's donations.
Yeah?
Most of the big chains buy all their produce way, way in advance.
Right. So they get
which
financed.
Is why when you get a sudden frost and they say, oh, the price is going to go up, you're actually getting ripped off because they already locked in with their prices months ago.
Okay.
So they pay for the produce up front.
What, are you talking about Otsar Beis Din? No, they would never say the pay for, but they would never say the pay for the produce.
But Rami Levy is going to go to Otsar Beis Din. I'm going to buy 2 tons of carrots. Here's the price, and here's the money.
I don't know how they actually do their dealings. All I know is that the way Otsar Beis Din is supposed to be set up today, the way they advertise is this. This is what they do. You're never buying the fruits. So again, you gain your Kedusha Shvi'as, right? You have that. You have like this funny thing of that, you know, sounds like a little bit of harama, they're kind of paying the workers, but you get to take home Peirush Shvi'as, okay?
But the whole point is though, so that there's no transaction.
Correct.
So the money, but you already solved it by paying with a credit card.
No. But but you're still having peor shvius. That's the key. In other words, it's not just there was originally Chazal didn't want you to engage in commercial activity. Ozer Beis today, what are they trying to do? They're trying to make sure that you still have peor shvius. Okay, that's what they care about. Okay.
The original owners don't see any of this
money. That was a
question. I don't follow the money trail. I don't follow the money trail. I don't get involved in this stuff, right? It's a great question.
The owners are getting a fee for their labor.
Basically, yes. Yes. Okay. Then comes this, Heter Mechira. Okay? Now, again, this is a huge area. There's a whole history behind it. Not interested in doing that here. There's plenty of stuff written about this, okay? But I want to get to what it actually is, okay? The Heter Mechira, the rationale made a lot of sense. And we're talking about in the early 1900s, when Heter Mechira starts becoming something, it's very simple. Jews are returning to Israel. If we are bound by Hilchos Shmita, they would starve. Okay? Now, I think it's fair to say, that problem doesn't exist today. Okay? It doesn't. Right? And it's funny. This is a classic, I have a theory, that once something becomes mutter, once you open the door to a heter, it's impossible to close it. Okay? It's impossible. Once that door is open, it's impossible. I don't think anyone here would say that today that we're in a situation of possibly starving if we abided by Hilchos Shmita. Right? Would it be very painful? Probably. Although I have a solution for it. It's a tax. But anyway, there are solutions. But I don't think we'd start. That it doesn't mean, and I'm going to emphasize this, it doesn't mean that Heter Mechira is not a valid halachic position. I'm just saying that these parameters don't exist anymore. Okay? And the concept is simple. According to a minority, okay, since Shemitah today is rabbinical, again, most hold it's the Rabbanan, but within that there's a minority who holds that since it's the Rabbanan, right, we could treat Eretz Yisrael like conquered land. What does conquered land mean in halacha? Okay? Syria, okay, or Syria. When David and Melech conquered Syria, what status does Syria have? Eretz Yisrael, Durabanam. So according to, it's brought down to Sefer Trumos, which is what everyone builds it off of, you want to say that since Shemitah today is Durabanam, well, maybe we could say Eretz Yisrael itself is Durabanam. Okay? Now think about that for a second. How many people here are comfortable saying that the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael today is Durabanam? Which means, Trumos and Maestros, all be Durabanam. Even though I know we treat them as Durabanam. But I'm saying, like, it's hard to imagine. It's hard to relate to it that way.
That's very Zionist.
Certainly not Zionist, okay? And therefore, land in Israel owned by non-Jews means the Protestant out of Kedusha Shvius. That's the key. So again, Shvita is Durabanam, Eretz Yisrael is Durabanam, which means you're not over the Issa Daraisa of selling land to non-Jews. Therefore, land in Israel owned by non-Jews means the produce does not have Kedusha Shvius. That is, in a nutshell, how Heter Mechira, how the Heter emerged. Yes?
So why in the first slide, when you have Otsa Ha'aretz, did it have to be Arab produce from outside Eretz Israel?
So they don't, because they don't hold the Heter Mechira. You know what I'm saying? They don't.
Ironically,
Otsa Ha'aretz is not.
The Haredim hold that it's Daraita.
Well, they treat it that way. That's true. They treat it that way. Yeah. For sure. Okay. I know. The whole thing is, it makes no sense, okay? So why is it so contentious? Why is it so contentious to say selling all of Eretz Yisrael to non-Jews? Let's put aside the concept of how you could possibly sell all the produce trees. That's a separate issue, okay? But the reason why is you're over this issue, okay? Lo sechanei. That's an issue d'oraisa, okay? We cannot sell land in Eretz Yisrael to non-Jews. It's an oper issue in the Torah. And there's a lot of intellectual gymnastics, no negative connotation there, to try to justify why that's not the case. But at the end of the day, this is the problem. Okay, you're talking about a potential Issa D'oraisa. That's the whole core of Heter Mechira. That's why it troubles many, many people. So that being the case, okay.
But we all know it's a technical sale. It's not a real transference of.
But that's even more. Oh, wait a second. So hold on to that point. I'm going to get back to that. Hold on to that point.
We know it's like.
That's why I don't use Mechira. That's why I don't sell my finance on Pesach. For that very reason, okay? The sale is for 2 years, and it's for the fruit trees and the area around the roots, okay? Again, how they can possibly make a contract out of that, although I can show you the contracts that have been written for Heter Mechira, it's very difficult. It's a very difficult thing, okay? Now, here's the thing.
What about vegetables?
No, not for vegetables, just for fruits. Oh, vegetables too. I'm sorry, vegetables too. Vegetables also. I apologize. Okay. Now, here's the thing. If you rely on Heter Mechira exclusively, then you will never experience peor shvius, kedusha shvius. If you're going to hold the Heter Mechira across the board, no pak shvius, no kedusha shvius, you're done. Okay? It's clear, though, without question, Heter Mechira was never set up as lechatchila. It never was. It was always a bidyevet. And I believe that we're not Bidyevet Jews. There were times where we had to be Bidyevet Jews, but should we always want to be Lechatchila? So my attitude is that, again, I don't hold, you'll see in a second, I'm not against Heter Mechira in the sense like some of the Haredim are, which is that if you hold a Heter Mechira, you're some of those names they call Bennett, right? That's not what I maintain. But at the same time, I do think that we can do better than Heter Mechira. That's the point, okay? And there's no question the factors that exist today weren't the same ones that existed at the time of the founding state of Israel. Baruch Hashem, we're a prosperous country, right? We can experience Shemitah and not, in a sense, suffer like the Jews might have suffered a long time ago, okay? Yes?
But there's a vast part of our economy that relies on exporting fruits and vegetables and flowers. And if they don't rely on Heter Mechira...
Can I tell you something? This country has accomplished so much. I give you my word. If enough people could agree, meaning religiously, and have one focus, we could solve that problem very easily. We could.
Given that it wasn't solved.
Because there's been no effort to try and solve it. What's happened is...
No, given that that's the reality.
Right, so...
It's not going to change for this Shemitah year.
But you, no, one second. So let me show the solution. I'll tell you what I do. Again, it doesn't matter, but I'll tell you what I do, okay? It really doesn't matter, but just because what I found for myself, a solution that makes me happy, okay? Okay, so... I try my best to buy produce from Otzar Beis Din. Not because I'm in favor of supporting, doesn't matter if the Haredi world, but rather, I like the fact that there's an effort put in to follow a method that was brought down by the Tosefta, even though they've twisted it, but it is the original method that Chazal instituted as a way of dealing with Perish Vias. So I try.
By the way, as far as I know, the Sephardim do not eat Otzar Beis Din. They just have Yibur Nachli.
Right. No, that's not true. They try to. That's not true. They try to.
If you go into any of the supermarkets here at Zephyr, it is all Yibur Nachli.
So if that's true, right? I remember last week I used to go around and I saw both in stores. However, the reason why that would be the case is because we're able to get so much more produce from non-Jewish origin. You understand? That's the reason why. Right. One day when... No, 100, not only that, when it comes to importing fruits and vegetables, there could be a period of time when there's no... What do you call it? Parish fees to engage with. Correct. That could be. But I'm saying they present it, so to speak, as coming from them. But you're right. I know. I'm saying my first week to here, I used to go around all these stores. I went in Kiryat Sefer as well. I'd see both. Okay? That's fine. Okay, so which means that ultimately there's no Kedusha Shvias. Okay? So I try my best to... And the other problem that also... But the reason why I don't... Well, I'll get to that in a second. The reason why I don't like doing only going... Like, I'll do Otsa Arts or... non-Jewish sometimes, but then again, I'm avoiding Perish Vias entirely. Like, I want to experience some Perish Vias. If I only bought fruit owned by non-Jews, I would never have Perish Vias. You know what I mean?
No, I was just pointing out that as far as I know, it's not like the only guy,
Right. It could be. Sometimes I also buy produce from Otzar. If I see, like, for instance, to me, it's sometimes based on the quality. For some reason, Otzar Beis Din, in my 1 year here, right, the quality is not that great. So sometimes if I can find better quality that's produced by non-Jewish farmers, great, I'll buy that also. But here's the key, okay? I will definitely buy produce from a place that relies on Heter Mechira. Why? Because just because I disagree with Heter Mechira doesn't mean I hold that it's usher or a position that doesn't make any sense. There are many, many brilliant Talmidei Chachamim who support Heter Mechira. The difference is that when I go to Rami Levi, right, and I'm buying fruits from the normal, area, I treat those produce as having Kedusha Shvias, right? They're relying on Heter Mechira. Okay? They're saying it's not. But why does that mean I have to say that? You understand what I'm saying? In other words, their svara brings them to the conclusion that these fruits don't have that. Exactly. Yes. So this to me, right? I'm not the one who invented this idea, but this to me, for me, has worked out very nicely. This way, I sometimes do this, which means non-Kedusha Shvias, but as much as possible, I try to stick with this and this. So when I go to, if I go to Rami Levi, right, I'm that one guy who will shop from all three sections, okay? If there's whatever's the nicest, if the nicest cucumbers are non-Jewish farm, I'll buy those. Then I'll get my carrots, Otzar Beis Din, and let's say my, whatever, zucchini from Heter Mechira. I don't care. I'm looking for the best quality. But either way, these I won't, but these two I'll always treat with Kedusha Shvias. Right, and that's why if I go to a restaurant that relies on Heter Mechira, what do I do when I go out to eat? I treat everything obviously if it's in season, I treat what they serve me as having Kedusha Shvias. To me, it's an easy way to say, you know what, I can have machlokas about Heter Mechira, but it doesn't mean I hold to endorsing it somehow is like promoting Isser.
So the restaurant has to make sure to leave nothing open.
Of course. Absolutely. Again, getting to scraps or leftovers. Yeah.
So you also have to separate your food at home. You buy some that's no free.
Absolutely. So, I mean, back in those days, it's only 7 years ago, they didn't have those reusable bags. So what I would do is I would have like a shopping bag, and I'd mark it, you know? But now, I'm going to take some of my reusable bags and say, these will be my Kedusha Shvius bags, and this will be my regular fruits.
But yeah.
Then you're gonna end up having to treat them all like Kedusha Shvius.
Yeah,
oh, you can do that. Yeah. But I'm like you know, uptight. So. Okay.
What about the amount? If you're buying something,
you to... No, I do the same thing. I treat again. To me, Hetter Mechira means they've done things that I disagree with, right? And like harvesting, etc. But I still hold a pair of Shvius, right?
I'm saying like what you buy.
Yeah. No, I would still buy small amounts, etc. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So I have an important question. How do you
of course
prepare shiurim during shopping?
It's a whole very like yeah.
Is there not a major machlokes between Yerushalayim and Bnei Brak?
About a lot of things. Yes, that's one machlokes. Yes, there's a machlokes about Otzer Beis Din that's that till this day Bnei Brak and Yerushalayim have different attitudes about it. My job is just to present the overall positions. I'm not interested in wading into why one guy says A or B. This is what exists, okay? My primary objective when it comes to produce during Shemitah is I want to experience Peiros Shvi'is. I do not want to live a Shemitah year only relying on Hetter Mechira, right? Meaning treating my fruits as if they have no Kedusha Shvi'is. To me, my personal opinion, I find it to be very problematic. I think that if you live in Eretz Yisrael, Hetter Mechira made a lot of sense as the only thing to rely on when we had nothing. But now today, I just don't see why a person would say, I'm only going to rely on Hetter Mechira. I don't see it. No, that's what I mean.
Except for the fact that some people don't like giving the Arab money to buy weapons.
No, so, okay, well, I'm not going to follow that entire causal stream, but that's an excellent point. Some people are bothered. It's ironic that Otzer Arts is also, there's a lot of religious Zionists behind it, but it is ironic because you're supporting, there's no 100% here. You understand? There's no ideal. All these have their problems. But the point is, to me, I personally would never only rely on this. Right? I wouldn't. What do you have to lose, so to speak? When you go to Rami Levi, you buy your Hetter Mechira stuff. So say this stuff is Perish, is Kedusha Shvi'is, and treat it that way. Why not?
Does your wife talk?
We've only been here for one Shvi'is, right? I don't make her life that miserable, don't worry.
Should I ask my wife, does she wake up? She goes, it's all too complicated.